if you were around in 1786 to glory in Mozart's famous opera, you probably would have wondered from whence this came. The Marriage of Figaro was penned in 1778 by Pierre Beaumarchais and was preceded by The Barber of Seville. Sound familiar? The writer pours out his rage at the aristocracy into a comedy of class and sexual inequality that manages equal parts hilarity and outrage in this spectacular manner. Muhlenberg College Theater and Dance Department now presents The Marriage of Figaro as the finale to the 2012-2013 main stage season, and they begin April 25th to the 28th. This is WDIY 88 Allentown, and you are listening and participating in Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I remain George Miller, and along with my wife and co-host Kate Scuffle, we chat today with Associate Professor of Acting at Muhlenberg College, Francine Rossell, who directs this brilliant play, and with Mike Krasukas, musician, composer, Zen for Primates co-founder, and a very good friend, who has collaborated with Francine in composing the original music for the production. Welcome.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello. You know, it's funny. We were just talking a little bit before the show. I don't know. I've not read or seen the piece. I would have known the opera, The Marriage of Figaro. Francine, what in... It's interesting to me. Tell us a little bit about what drew you to the piece, why you wanted to see the Muhlenberg students in the department work with it.
Well, first, I saw the play, I think, when I was 14, and still have a mesmerized memory of it.
Mm.
And I've never seen it since.
Really?
Yes. And when we are looking for the next project, I have a long list of dream plays, mm-hmm. and The Marriage of Figaro is one of them, or was one of them. And I thought that the play is still so alive for the subject of, you know, right and sexuality, mm-hmm. and attitude of woman and the power of woman. And the political background of the play, I think, to me is quite important.
It's interesting because really, for folks that may or may not know a little bit about the story, the common man, the servants, the people, the average people in the play, not the nobility, are the ones that really kind of steer the plot and steer the action. As you were saying earlier, really kind of put the count in his place in the end in many ways, and particularly the women.
Yes. The count at the end, you know, has to admit his own failure. And it's not something that he likes particularly. But it took five acts and a lot of efforts from everybody in the play to try to combat him and combat his desire to have sex with the fiancée, because that was the droit du seigneur, the mm-hmm. right of the nobility to sleep with any woman before they would get married.
And that's a historical.
That's
true.
That was true. I wouldn't say that all aristocrats did that, but it was their right. They didn't even have to pay anything for it.
And interestingly, though, this is a play taking place that, well, no, by the time it was produced, it's 5 years before the French Revolution. But tell us a little bit. It wasn't produced immediately, partly because it was so pointed.
Yes. The King Louis the 16th was extremely upset when there was a reading of the play. And he resisted for 3 years. Mm. And finally, after many censors and a little bit of political connections that Beaumarchais had, he found some supporters of the play. And the play was created at the Comédie Française, which mm-hmm. was, you know, a sign of recognition.
Yeah.
And because there had been such a brouhaha about that play, it was a huge success. Everybody was waiting and wanted to be seen at the play. And, you know, it's since then, it's always a very popular play.
Well, and if I'm correct, part of the journey of getting it produced was the change of setting from France to Spain. Was considered politically a little more palatable.
Yes.
Which is how we arrive at Mike's involvement in working with music, with a Spanish or even flamenco feel, which I understand you both have an interest in and a love for that kind of music.
Yes, to make it in a different country was kind of a little bit of a political piece, because whatever would be not acceptable would be on the count of the Spanish and not of the French.
Yeah.
And that's where Mike came in.
Yeah. Thank goodness, Mike, right? Because if it would have been German, you would have had to get your trombone out.
Yeah, I would have been, you know, tubas and
tubas
and accordion. No, but at the first meeting that we had, Francine and I, that came up, that the Spanish aspect to the play, and therefore the use of music that Beaumarchais was actually familiar with, which was this folkloric music, Segadilla, it went by various similar names, but he actually called for that within the score, within the stage direction of the play. So that got me back into something that I had always been interested in. Francine had worked on a flamenco-based piece, I believe, just sometime before this. So we were both really into this at this point.
And
so it was a great experience being able to explore and compose in that realm and also learn more about it, which I'd always been fascinated by.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting to me that the script did. It called for, I mean, one would imagine transition music or in and out of scenes, but that he actually really indicated, you said that there probably was originally music composed that we don't have now, but that there was clear indication that this was part of the process and the production then. So you've created a whole new piece of his piece, of the Marriage of Figaro.
Yeah. I guess luckily the original music is pretty much unknown, so it allows composers to take a crack
a
at this.
Freedom
yes.
there, yeah, yeah, yeah,
total
yeah.
freedom.
Yeah,
but I think that Beaumarchais would be very pleased with what Mike did. Aww. I am convinced of that.
And this is the first time you've collaborated the two, right?
Yes.
Although, Mike, you go back at Muhlenberg, you've worked on a lot of other Muhlenberg productions.
But this has been very enjoyable. I've really enjoyed working with Francine on this.
And it's this, I was just going to mention, it's this weekend only. It's Friday through Sunday, so I would encourage people as we go on talking about the piece. It really is remarkable. The piece is so rarely done anyway. And then to have an original score and to work with the students. And I was asking you, Francine, about this contemporary students' take on it. I mean, these sound like some wonderful roles for women, which is not always common. And then the political overtones or the societal overtones are interesting. How was that journey for the students?
Well, I think it was a surprise for them at the beginning, the subject of the play, and then to realize the context behind. And that end of the 18th century and, you know, all the new ideas that were brought through great writers. And so I exposed them to several films that gave them a sense of how that society worked and the abuse of the privileges and the terrible conditions of the peasants and the servants and how... from the inner power of ordinary people, suddenly the sense of their own force manifested, and it ended up, of course, with the revolution, which was bloody, but which was such a necessary change in that society that had become totally corrupt, and where the inequalities were huge. So I think that it gave the students a little bit of sense of maybe their own capabilities and powers in terms of politics to make a change. You know, they are the future, and so they possess that power, and I hope they're going to use it well, inspired by the play.
And it's as well as a strong parts for the women, there's an opportunity for another actress to play a gentleman.
Yes.
So there's all kinds of interesting levels of stepping outside comfort zones, it seems to me, too, which is interesting. Different period, different clothing, different politics, different world, and yet parallels.
Yes, and even two of the women at the end of the play switch parts and switch costumes. Mm. So the exploration is almost endless, like becoming another body within your own body of already being a character and then finding a different voice.
And yet it can say, I'm hearing ourselves thinking, it's interesting to remind the audience, but it's a comedy and a fast-paced... You were saying, Mike, particularly taking the script home and working with it yourself, you were really enjoying
so
that.
So much serious content and serious, you know, processes going on and you know, themes being espoused here, and it's actually very funny to boot. And you know, it's very enjoyable to watch.
When you were creating the piece that you were after having read the script and collaborating with Francine. Was there ever a point where you came to writing a piece in a particular area of the play where you were dissatisfied with yourself before you showed it to anyone else or let anyone else hear it? Because sometimes we go through that process. As an actor, as a director, we say, oh, yeah, this will work. And then, it might not. So how do you make that decision on what is working and what isn't with the script or with the piece?
Yes, that was the answer to the first part of your question. Yes, no, that happens a lot, and you don't. Yeah, you. I've learned over the years of doing original music is like you. I go with my first instincts, and then you go back and you back up and you think about it, see it with what's going on, you know, all those things, and adapt. I mean, I think that's probably true in almost all arts. Well, you see the Mona Lisa, you see how they scraped the paint off of that. With the x-rays they found. He didn't just go wham and it all. But I think as any artistic creation, you go back and look at it. It's very rarely that, you know, you can write little ditty songs that just pop out and
full blown
and you love them right away. But anything with like a little more depth, you have to.
Getting back to the history of the play, which is interesting to me because Beaumarchais wrote this as a trilogy.
Yes.
The Barber of Seville.
Right, that's right.
That some of us are familiar with. And then the Marriage of Figaro. And there was another one, was there not?
Yes. The Guilty Mother. And it's quite interesting to read, but it's of a totally different vein because he wrote it after the revolution. Okay. And for example, suddenly it's in Paris and the Count refuses to be addressed as Milord. He wants to be called Monsieur because he wants to have a low profile to keep his head on his shoulders. And it's really an emotional journey. It's called The Guilty Mother. And it's a sequence to the Marriage of Figaro. Mm-hmm. So we have still Susanna and Figaro and the Countess and the Count.
And they're still there.
Yes.
Thank you all for being with us. We are chatting with Francine Rousseau, the director, and Mike Krasukas, composer of The Marriage of Figaro at Muhlenberg College opening this week. And we shall return momentarily after this glorious pronouncement. Oh, incidentally, and this personal request for your support of WDIY.
Hi, this is Bill Altamont-Smith, Executive Director at WDIY. And as I hope you're aware now, we are in day one of our spring pledge drive. This is your only opportunity to pledge during Lehigh Valley Arts Salon. If you appreciate and value the arts programming that you get once a week here, every Monday evening on Lehigh Valley Arts Salon, bringing you in particular lots of what's happening in local theatre in the Lehigh Valley, but also local musical festivals, books from new authors, contemporary dance, basically the whole spectrum of the arts. We keep you abreast of what is happening in the Lehigh Valley. We often have ticket giveaways for these events as well. If you value having a program like this on the airwaves, which I don't think you will be catching anywhere else on radio in the Lehigh Valley, Now is the time to show your support and make that call of support, 610-758-8810, or securely online at wdiy.org. We are listener-supported community public radio. We rely on you, the listeners, to support financially the programming on this station. We pledge to use your support really, really frugally. Almost all our hosts are volunteers. In fact, all of our hosts are volunteers. Your money goes a long way. But we do need money to pay the bills, to pay the rent, to pay the utilities, to pay for all the equipment. And so twice a year, we come to you on air and ask for your support. And now is one of those times. 610-758-8810 or securely online at wdiy.org. And today is Earth Day, and we will thank you. In honor of your support, a tree will be planted in recognition. Every donation will trigger a tree planting this year happening along the Jordan Creek. So you can do two good things in one shot. Pledge support for your local community public radio station and improve the environmental quality of your community by a tree planting. All by one simple phone call, 610-758-8810. Please help us keep on track. We have slipped a bit behind today, so we're depending on you, our listeners. Please make that call, 610-758-8810.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you very much. But yes, we ask your support of WDIY. For those of you who are in the arts and support the arts, it's ever so important to support those people who support us. And you can help by making a pledge right now to WDIY. We're chatting with Francine Rousseau, director, and Mike Krasukas, composer of The Marriage of Figaro, which plays Muhlenberg College opening this weekend. You, of course, you're listening to WDIY 88.1, Allentown, Bethlehem.
And just because we tend to get carried away enjoying our conversations, I do want to remind folks that it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 8 o'clock, and a Sunday at 2 o'clock performance. Adult tickets are $15. Students, I believe, are 12?
Students at 8.
Oh, 8. Very good.
Great.
So four opportunities to see a show rarely presented, rarely produced. And one that sounds like thought-provoking, fun, smart. Are you going to have this? I was going to say, is it's the finale of the season? It sounds like a wonderful way for the students to go out for the year too, with something very colorful and smart and bright and energetic.
Yes.
No, because I know part of what Mike we were talking about, instead of not just the transitional music, there's actually music within scenes for celebrations and the finale at the end. Francine, you were saying originally it's a long French song for about 10 characters. I think you've compressed it a bit.
Yes. We had to compress the play. I think the play in its full display is about probably 4 hours. So now it's 2.5 hours,
okay,
with intermission.
And you actually chose the translation in part because you felt the translation you're using was a little tighter and brighter than that sense.
Yes, yeah. and close to the original. Okay. Really, with a great spirit, and it's done by two British translators, Robert Cogeau-Fawcett and Braham Murray.
Okay, and there's occasionally a little bit of Britishisms that were also perhaps trimmed. I think that's interesting. Mike, you were going to. You looked like you were jumping in there, and I
no, just very
always
happy,
aware
that's
of all. That. Well, no, I think it was funny because we were saying earlier too. We were being honest, and Francine, you said one of your, in working with Mike for the first time, it had crossed your mind that what if you needed to redirect him at all? How would that go? But you were didn't find that you felt the need.
Yes. It was like osmosis, from the day we met and discussed just a little bit getting to know each other and our taste in music.
It felt very comfortable, our relationship right from the beginning. I mean, you know, it was very nice initial meetings and only got better.
I'm intrigued. Can you tell me a little bit more? I didn't realize this about flamenco. You're talking about the kind of folk dance roots, a gypsy
flamenco is just a fascinating form. I mean, Garcia Lorca, there's a great quote of him calling this one of the last remaining original song forms, if you will, of civilized man. I mean, if you could think in terms of, you know, contemporary song form, that flamenco is still so raw. I mean, and there still exists, you know, very seminal original forms of this, which fascinates me as a musician. I mean, I love folkloric music from everywhere in the world, and this is just such a strong you know, strong form. And it's, there's so many different forms of it. I mean,
and it's a living, it's a living.
Yeah, it's form. It's just very complex. Yeah. It's rhythmically really very interesting. You know, at times complicated, mm-hmm, and always interesting.
The students didn't need, we were saying earlier, the students didn't need to actually learn to play it, but some of them need to appear to be appearing to play it. And you were talking about these very distinctive even ways the hands are working the instrument. It's just...
Yeah, that was something that we talked about very initially, too, in our meetings, was that they were going to be, someone's going to hold a guitar, you know, and physically play this, and we wanted, and because the music is recorded, you know, they're playing from the recorded versions.
Now, I'm just fascinated as an actor what it would be to respond to music. And do you, Francie, did the actors, did their first response when they were trying to find a way to look as though they were playing, did they seem to feel the music? Did it affect them, do you think, instinctively?
Well, I think it took some work. some had never held a guitar before.
Okay, okay.
And I wouldn't say we reach a perfect level, but I think it, with the image and the dance, it really works, mm-hmm, you know, because the music just transports you in that different world.
Yeah.
And with the costumes and... the certain activity that takes place with the dance, you really feel that connection to another culture, and that's really enchanting.
And you said Beaumarchais was a huge fan of Spanish music, ironically. Yeah.
Yes, he traveled to Spain for business reasons, for family reasons, and he was a musician himself. In fact, he was... the music teacher for the four daughters of Louis the 15th.
Oh.
And he was an inventor himself. He was a watch maker. That's how he was trained by his father. And so he loved music. And when he was in Spain, of course, he got in contact with all the different forms of music. And when he came back from Spain, he lost one of his suitcases, and he was desperate because that suitcase had all the music he had accumulated. So I'm almost sure that in the very first production, the music was composed by the official composer of the Comédie Française, who probably was very, very French and didn't have any insight in Seguidilla or Fandango.
Yeah.
And I think that Mike, finally, 200 years later, realizes Beaumarchais' dream.
He's pleased.
there's great opportunity. It made me think of the Folies d'Espagne, which is another thing that's called for in the original, which is just a very interesting form of music. If you want to get into another technical aspect of the music, it was a structure that's been done over and over again. Many composers have dealt with this form. It's basically a harmonic chord structure that you do variations on, and that's had a long history with composers, and it's really fun to work with that. I enjoyed that a lot.
I always am interested in another thing, and that is, for example, music. We've talked about this, Mike, before, about music having an acceptance and an understanding all the time. We don't need a translation or an adaptation of the sound of what music is doing. But I recollect that talking to you, Francine, that this is a rather new adaptation, is it not, of the Marriage of Figaro?
The translation, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes, it's been done in the last 5 or 6 years. And, you know, it's done quite often. I mean, new translators always want to retranslate the play.
Really?
Yes, at least in Europe.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's sad to say we're almost
out of time.
And first we want to thank Steve Aronson for
juggling
everyone
really
tonight.
Really our engineer, our Figaro, who really marries our scratchy voices to melodious sounds, making us sound heavenly. Thank you, Steve, very much.
And go ahead.
Yeah, and thank you, Francine. And Mike for being here.
I just wanted to remind people again, it's this weekend, of course, Thursday, Friday, Saturday night at 8, Sunday at 2. You can order tickets online, go to the Muhlenberg website. You can email the box office, or you can call 484-664-3333. But it's a rare opportunity in what sounds like a fascinating piece. Thank you both.
Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.